Yeah.
No straws.
No straws allowed. No plastic straws allowed. If you just bring that into yourself then, bring the microphone towards you. Yeah, that's probably bang on. What you have for breakfast?
3 Weetabix.
3? Oh, he's a grown fella.
See, if I don't have 3 Weetabix by lunchtime, I'm just like... Mm.
Really? You crash?
Oh, yeah.
Have you always been a Weetabix man?
Since I was about 2, I think.
Unbelievable.
1 or 2, yeah.
And how do you take yours?
Cold.
Right.
Full fat milk.
Oh, it's a must.
And don't wait more than 2 minutes to eat it.
Yeah.
No mush. Has to have a bit of
crunch to it. I'm a big fan of a cold Weetabix.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when I was a young man, you know, at the age of 2 and 3, I'm sure I did have a warm Weetabix.
Uh-huh.
But I think cold's the way to go. And it just saves you those precious, you know, 1 minute.
Older brother used to let it sit and stew and then microwave it. And it was just a bowl of slop.
I mean, just eat ready break at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's exactly. Like,
crazy, man. Crazy. Yeah.
I think he just wanted the Weetabix brand.
It's a
cool
strong
kids.
Brand.
Mm, yeah.
I didn't realize how strong it was until I went somewhere where it didn't exist. I was like, wait, what do you mean you don't know what Weetabix is?
Uh-huh.
You know?
I will make a small, embarrassing admittance here. I got my mum to send me Weetabix when I lived in Australia.
Mate, no Weetabix in Australia?
They had Weetabix, which just weren't quite.
Get out of here.
Per seconds.
100%. I would have thought Australia would have represented, you know. Because it's a very, like, Britannia brand, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I guess it just costs too much to send there.
I'm looking at it now, and, you know, you have all these... There are programs on of, you know, border control Australia.
Yeah.
Like, how the heck did they send, a wheat product?
Honestly?
through the post.
Crazy, man.
And it wasn't sprayed or burnt before it came
through. Yeah.
Thinking about it now, I'm like, geez, they must have been really lax.
Yeah. When did you live in Australia?
We were there from in 99, 2000.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
We'll definitely cover that. I can't believe, you know, Weetabix when you're 2. That's great. Because a question I usually ask people is, what's the first thing you can remember?
Uh-huh.
Or what's one of the earliest things you can remember?
It's probably up there. Yeah. Second thing is, I was maybe about 4, and I answered the door to a a human-sized penguin. And the middle opened and my dad's face was inside it. And it didn't shock me.
So
we're a family of good fancy dressers.
Really? So yeah. Dad would whip out the penguin suit frequently.
No, that was a hire. But it was definitely it's one of the earliest things I remember.
That was what, an architect?
Yes. Uh-huh.
What influence would his architecture have on? Because they're both kind of visual mediums, in a way.
It was really hard in school to be in art class, to be the son of an architect, because you'd bring stuff home and you'd go, right, they want us just to draw an apple. And no. You're not going to draw an apple. And he would get the sketch pad out and he would start doing this, construction. And you'd be like, wow, that's really difficult.
So he would have had the gift of drawing.
Yeah.
I know that sounds kind of a bit silly, but and Mark Todd's probably going to kill me, but my impression is that you maybe don't have to have the ability to draw to be an architect these days.
Mark is, as you know, an exception to the rule because he sits and draws away there. And it's funny because my dad is a very good friend of his uncle's.
Really?
Barry Todd, which would have been Todd's architect.
Unbelievable.
And my dad's semi-retired, but I think as a creative industry, and I know I'm in the same boat, you're never going to retire. He had friends that tried to get him into golf. Golf did not work. Loves his garden, and he just loves adding bits to his house. Mm-hmm. Like, our house was, when we were growing up, it's the first house he built for himself that they still live in, down in Bangor. And it's morphed. It started off as a good-sized house.
Then
it's just turned into... You know, any friends we used to have over used to say it's what they'd imagine being on a cruise ship or a spaceship or a mix of the two, because there's no rooms on the same level. this amazing view over Crawfordsburn Bay, which was a big influence in my early photography. I have like thousands of photographs of that same spot with different sunsets and so that was probably a huge influence for me early on. And then obviously I do really enjoy architectural photography because yes, those things rubbed off, and yes, I do understand how a building is formed and purpose of it and all those bits. And I did dodge a bullet. My older brother, he's 21 months older than me, he took the architecture bullet.
Did he?
Yes.
So you didn't have to.
Well, at A-level stage, I was all geared up to, you know, you had your careers talk, and it was like, okay, what does your dad do? What does your mum do? Okay, you're going to have the same job as your dad. You know, it was one of those really, you know, put it in the hat. Here's what you're going to be, a spaceman. they said, yeah, you're going to be an architect. I was like, okay. And say, okay, you have to study these topics to be an architect. So you're going on your way to that. And I was actually, my foray into where I am now, we'd actually had art class, and it was the usual art teacher. He's a fine artist, pure and simple. There was no other art other than fine art. The painted form, anything else was just rubbish. And I was a real graphics man. I loved magazine, you know, text, posters. So all that was just, you know, it wasn't making the grade. And then one of the guys that was one of my best mates there, he actually did a night course in tech doing, darkroom work. And they had a darkroom in the art class. So we used to spend hours in there. And the art teacher would just rap on the door and go, can I come in? And we say, oh, paper exposed. You know, so he couldn't come in. So every time, you know. So that, I think, was the sort of the second part of the photography then for me. You know, earlier years would be that sort of that landscape view. And unfortunately for the art teacher, but fortunately for us, he was quite ill at one stage, and we got the substitute teacher in.
Dun, dun, dun.
Lovely lady. And she'd sort of said, so what are you guys into? And I'm like, oh, graphics. I was like, oh, my husband is actually a graphic designer. Would you like me to bring him in to do, you know, set a couple of projects for you, have a chat to you about it and whatnot. Yeah. So I said, yes, please.
Mate, what a teacher.
So he came in. I loved his work. I loved his project so much. I put so much into it. He came back and he looked at all the work and he said, oh, you know, it's a great job you did there. Would you fancy coming in to the studio to, you know, come in for a work experience? I was like, yeah, definitely. So that was, I think that was my lower sixth year summer. I went in there, and then my dad had a graphic design agency doing some stuff for them, so I got into them. So I spent a summer. I did three really big graphic design agencies.
Unreal.
And I loved it. The bit I liked the most was the photo shoots, and they used the same guy. All the agencies used the same guy.
Yeah.
So I sort of, you know, got to know him. It was a guy, Chris Hill. He is a legend for, you know, certainly I would say Irish photography at least, if not Northern Irish photography. And so I kind of went from the graphics. I went, I want to work with this guy.
Yeah.
So I started doing weekends, school holidays, summer holidays in the studio with him.
Class.
And they were going to Dublin. They were going all over Ireland. You know, we were overnighting it, and it was places I'd never seen and people you'd never meet. And that's kind of how it's so gone good. On. So, yeah.
So that was like 17, 18?
Yeah, yeah.
Fair play, mate.
Yeah. So, and I think that saved my bacon for the architecture. Yeah, definitely.
Class.
So
you were a banger boy then?
I was.
Ish.
I was a banger man till fifth form.
Right.
And then the folks thought it was a good idea to move schools. Because again, the older brother took the drop on the A level. They didn't like the teachers. They didn't like the way it was sort of, he was progressing or not progressing. So they went, okay, we're going to move you to Campbell, which was kind of Bangor Grammar's arch nemesis. So I kind of spent 2 years making friends.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Not doing a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it did sort of set me on this path, you know, which I'm a big believer in. Things kind of do happen for a reason. So, and that's kind of how I live my life. It kind of goes like that. I'm not really pushy about my work. A lot of people say, you know, you should be hammering these guys' doors down to get work. But I just don't like forcing it. I'd rather they want me to do it rather 100%. Than, you know, we're just going to give you the work to shut you up. So I think that's put me in good stead, because the people do come back, and it doesn't, you know, to your bank manager, does not look good in your diary for, you know, oh, we've got 3 years of work booked up because I'm not a wedding photographer. But it does, just seems to roll through, and things just sort of fit, and you get the right work just when you don't expect it.
100%.
You know, so it is kind of a, this is definitely not a business plan conversation for anybody. No, but I've been so fortunate to work with, as I said, Chris Hill was great. It was probably one of the biggest studios in Ireland at the time.
So good, man.
There was maybe about 10 of us in there at one stage. Can you imagine a photographic studio with 10 people in it?
Madness.
Now it's, you're lucky if, like, Chris is still working. I think there's two of them there.
Yeah.
And that's big. Yeah. You know, and then myself, I'm just freelance, so
yeah.
I'll do most of the work myself, 100%. You know, and setting up and whatnot. So,
like, when you were growing up, would you have, like, what sort of stuff would you have been up to? Like, how often would you have been in the sea? Like, would you have brought a camera with you on those sort of experiences? When did you start carrying a camera? That come later.
Probably about 16.
Yeah.
I was a skater in
Bangor. Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Didn't sort of, football's never really stuck on me to watch it or play it.
Yeah.
I think in school it was always picked last, put in nets, blame for losing.
Yeah.
that's kind of football to me, unfortunately.
That's it's kind of
spoiled it. So I've always, you know, skateboarding was a good, you know, it was pretty rife in Bangor, certainly anyway, and, you know, just a good squad of mates, and go out and just roll around and get told off by people for rolling around in their property. And I don't think it mattered if you were any good at it or not any good at it, you know, you'd always egg on the other people that were there. Or, and then I suppose I would have started bringing the camera along to sort of shoot people doing it a bit as well. So early ends of sport photography. I really enjoyed that, and it was quite social. You could just meet up with mates, and you could skate around and wreck yourself, or you could just sit on your board and watch other people skate around and wreck themselves. it was sort of in or out. I was never really a competitive sporting protege. You know, I love swimming, which sort of pulled in later in life. I love the sea. I like surfing, stand up paddleboarding, snorkeling, diving, anything water orientated.
Yeah,
and I think the skateboarding was born from surfing.
That's right.
California.
Do you know who taught me that? Flippin' Mark Todd.
What?
That surfing was a.
Yeah, it was for when it was flat in California, and the guys were bored, and they put wheels on little mini surfboard shaped things, and that was, skateboarding was born. But no, it is a cult. It's exciting, and it's, you know, it's fab that it's been included in the Olympics now as well, because it is, you know, although surprising as well, because you don't see a lot of people skateboarding these days.
You don't.
You've scooters, and BMXing still pretty strong, but I think there's been a bit of a revival on it. I did actually start skating again.
Did you?
3 years ago.
Epic.
It's sore. It's so sore when you're
it's
old.
Tough on the old joints, isn't it?
Yeah. But love ramps. I think it sort of hikes back to the sea thing. It's just that sort of drop always loved that sort of transition thing, you know. I was never a big man for jumping 20 million steps. that just was painful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like ramps and stuff. So,
but interesting, like, for you to be a part of that culture, like, it was even radically different, like, even probably, like, 10 years later. Because, like, I think about, like, skateboard and I think about, like, YouTube videos.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we were doing. It was like we were looking and seeing all the videos people were making. Or like nowadays, you know, you'd be on Instagram or TikTok and seeing what people are doing.
Yeah.
How did you see what people were doing? Like, what influences did you have, even from like the visual side of stuff?
You had magazines and you'd really dodgily made videos. People like.
And how were they? How were they consumed or like passed around?
Yeah, yeah, it was just you'd go around to someone's house and someone would buy one or copy one.
Really?
Or you can't really say that, can we? yeah, and they're passed out. But they're, you know, they were, even if it was a new video, it didn't have the Hollywood production. Like, it was all nasty video camera stuff. But you were seeing guys from all over the States and all over the world and just doing and seeing things that were like, okay, people were like, yeah, we can try that, you know, and break your neck. Or whatever. So, yeah, and that was that kind of social side of it as well. You'd meet up at someone's house, do that, and you'd go out and go, right, let's hit the streets and class. Try some of this stuff. It still has that now. And then there was very few of those big names would have come here, if at all. So you would have got quite a lot of the guys from down south, the bigger names, and guys from England. Mm-hmm. Would have come over, and there wasn't really facilities for it either, like they had over there. Like there was a metalworks up in Antrim that this guy, his dad owned the metalworks. He worked there and he made these death trap steel. Like one of them, I think, you know, maybe when you're smaller it looked bigger. It looked about 20 feet of this big metal thing, and then a smaller one beside it. And they got all these well-known guys from England to come over. And so it was all like, right, whose mum can leave us off at Antrim for the day? And can we skate back from Antrim to Bangor? You know, all these sort of things came into play. But yeah, we kind of went up to those. But I kind of dropped it off at about 16. Was when I sort of, was when they made the boards the same shape at both ends. Popsicle boards. And I was like, nope, I don't know whether I'm going or coming, so I'll just drop it at that. But it did, it sort of floated on then whenever, I think end of sixth form and then into college. I met a guy who was quite mad on surfing, and that kind of brought in a wee bit of that skateboarding and the water thing sort of came together, which was, yeah, so... A lot of years on, I say 26 years later, and still trying to surf.
So good. And still skating.
Loosely. Bits. Well, the kids are kind of, the kids are on BMXs and scooters, and started taking them to all these cool ramp places, like when they had T13 over in the Titanic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Met a few of the guys there, and the kids sort of got into it. You know, a couple of weeks of taking them down to this. I'm like, geez, I wish we'd had something like this when I was a kid. To then, you know, sitting with all the other dads with their Times newspaper and their cappuccinos. And I'm like, I don't drink coffee and I don't read the paper. And this just looks too good. So then I dug out the old board.
Did you?
As I'd left it from 16.
Epic.
Went to dad's and went, is my old skateboard still here? And they went, it might be jammed in that far corner of the garage. It out and found a load of old boards, and it kind of reignited that wee bit of that that sort of nostalgia. So then, from the guys being there for 3 weeks, then I started bringing the board for 3 weeks, and then I stood on the edge of the ramp for 3 weeks.
Oh, really?
It was tiny. I just couldn't get over it. And then one day, I just... bugger it, and I did it, and I was like, wow, this is amazing.
Unbelievable.
Then I started to go with them to the skate park sessions, and then this other dad came over and he says, I've been coming down here for a couple of weeks and I noticed you're down with the kids, and I dug out my skateboard.
Oh, mate, come on.
And it was so funny, because then he was like, have you dropped in on that big ramp there? No, I have not. And he says, I'm going to, if you do.
Ooh.
Like, yeah.
You never lose it, like...
aim.
Like that desire to
you never bounce
to,
as
that
much.
Desire to play, or like that desire yeah. to like constantly challenge. Like it is, yeah. it never leaves you.
Like it's kind of nice. Like my wife would probably say, "You're just a big kid," and I'm like, "Yes, yes, I am." But you'll know yourself. Having kids now kind of allows you to pull in a wee bit back 100%. Of what you did when you 100%. Were when you were.
And I mean, like young. You guys seem to have like a really great setup. Like you seem to be like. Always outdoors, seem to really enjoy the outdoors, even as a yeah. family. You've got the van, you've got the dogs, and like I just love to see that.
Yeah.
It's one of my big gripes.
It's cliched, but it's really good fun.
But mate, one of my big soapboxes is like this country is primed for like an amazing outdoor culture.
Yeah.
And we're so afraid of the weather.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I think it's something I learned from living in Australia, and then we were in New Zealand for a part of the time. If you'd said, yeah, Friday night, bring around a couple of beers and we'll get a DVD, they'd be like, what? It's like, no, we're going out. We're going to go down. We're going to go down to the beach and have a barbecue on the beach or a fire, or we're going to go to this park, or we're going to go mountain biking, or we're going to mm-hmm. take scramblers off and we're going to go here. There was no sit on your bum. Mm-hmm. There's no indoor culture at all in those countries, which is yeah. amazing.
Yeah.
Which is why they're all out. They're all out swim, surf. You know, get on your bike, and it's a super place, great people, and great times.
What brought you out there?
I finished my degree. Then, you know, there was a bunch of us at the end. We're like, we're going to do the Australia visa. You know, get out there and do the sort of holiday work visa thing. And I had, fortunately but unfortunately, I had quite a bad accident. I was knocked off my bike. In final year, first part of final year of college. So I got a huge claim and it was like, okay, this is paying for going over there.
Awesome. Bicycle, so, motorbike?
Bicycle.
What happened to you?
Lady pulled out in front of me. I hit the wheel, Superman or bonnet, smashed my knee in the front and slid on my butt down the street. No helmet on. Yay.
Ouch.
Yeah, but... You want to see the bike? It was it was my... older brother's bike.
Such a skater thing to say.
It's as well I wasn't on a skateboard either. I wouldn't have been able to clear the front of that car, no problem. It was his old rally milk race, my older brother's. Class. He hadn't used it for years, and I fixed it up, got it going, and I was getting a good speed out of it down a hill.
Yeah.
But the two front wheels, perfect.
Really?
The frame just looked like the Hulk just went...
Crumpled it.
I didn't even get a chance to do that. It just pulled out. So I didn't break anything. I had a bit of ligament damage to my leg and then a bruised bum. So I came out pretty lucky.
Yeah.
And that kind of... It was funny, that one, because I think by that stage we'd all chatted about it. We'd all applied for the visas and stuff.
Yeah.
So we were pretty set to go, and it was kind of like, right, it's going to be working 15 weekend jobs
yeah.
in between college stuff.
Yeah.
Finish up your final year to get money together to go, because they said you have to have a $3,000 pot.
Yeah.
To get the visa so that you can support yourself.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
What happened there is I put it in the bank. Put my statement, sent it off with the application, took the money out, gave it to the next guy. He put it in his bank.
No way!
He printed his statement, he sent it in, took it out, gave it to the next guy.
The circular economy. So
everyone went out there penniless except for me. I did get it back, but that allowed us all to get out
Look
there.
Look at that.
Which was good, which I don't think you could get away with these days either.
Oh, but
yeah, so that was the kind of incentive was to, I hadn't been away with college, so I wanted to get further afield. And boy, did we have a good time.
I bet.
Amazing experiences, amazing people, amazing places. And most of the budget went on, it was even, back in that day, I had a really good film camera, so I took a film camera and I shot transparency slide film. So for all the stuff, so I have loads of prints at home that are just, I need to do an exhibition of that stuff.
Yeah, that'd be
and
fun.
I need to digitally scan them all put them up. But yeah, so yeah, that was the film budget was higher than the food and fuel budget, I think, at that stage. But you wouldn't have wanted to miss the opportunities. And I'm a nightmare to travel with because I'm like, stop every 5 minutes. That looks amazing. Let's go there. You know, anybody that's traveled with me, that's like, you're a nightmare. You're a nightmare to go on holiday. Because you can't switch off. You want to catch everything, you know.
So at what point then did you start your business?
Well, I worked on and off 8 years for Chris Hills, which just gave me the best founding I could have. Chris was an amazing architectural photographer and landscape photographer. And then there was four photographers in there at the time. So Jill Jennings was another great photographer in there, and she was fantastic with people, portraiture, live event. Cara Pringle was in there. Insane fashion photography. So you had such a great mix of influence of these sort of people that were just on their A game, you know, and you were just able to sponge that off. So worked on and off with Chris for 8 years in the studio, and it was just like, we did have a wee bit of an in-joke that I'd be out in shoots assisting Chris, and people go, oh, is he your dad?
And Chris,
Chris would go, son, would you ever hurry up and get that light set up? Stop talking. I'm like, okay, dad. You know, there's a wee bit of joke on that. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for the guys that I worked in there, and they give you their time to let you know the ins and outs of it. So, But I had been in there the last year and a half. I'd been in there. I kind of, you know, I had my degree behind me. I'd done the traveling, and I just wanted to, you know, I wanted to get my teeth into. So by the time it came through four photographers, then down to us, you know, down the lower end of things, it wasn't great stuff. But again, you were given it.
You're grateful for it.
Yeah, grateful for it. You did your best with it. Then I'd actually had, there's a guy I worked with briefly before I went away to Australia, a fellow George Rowe, super guy, great photographer, and he had a studio that was above a nightclub over in Cathedral Quarter, and there had been a little fire in the nightclub, so his studio got wrecked.
No.
So he had sort of said, look, setting up a new studio, I want to go completely digital. Now, I had been in Chris Hills through the evolution of digital photography. So, you know, we'd started off, he'd bought this, this is Chris now when I was still in Chris Hills. He'd bought a Kodak Nikon hybrid camera. And what megapixel was that camera? Now, it was a big, big, chunky camera. What was the megapixel in that camera? My question to you, Matthew.
I mean, I remember having a Sony Ericsson that was 2 megapixels and thinking it was the sweetest thing on the planet.
Yeah. So what do you think that big boy was?
I have to go for, I have to say 2.
It was 1.3 megapixels. And I remember the first client, and it was a big design agency client that we did a lot of work for. They came in and Chris went, we've got Northern Ireland's first digital camera. We're going to do your shoot digitally. I was like, okay, big yep behind it. And we shot it and we brought up the photos. And what did the client say straight away? They say, could you reshoot that with film? That's awful.
Oh,
it's terrible. Man. It was grainy, it was grey, it was flat. It was awful. And then that was like a bit of a slap on the cheeks for us. So we invested in a big drum scanner. So we shot everything on slide, transparency film, scanned it. And that's how it was produced then. But then, obviously, as digital sort of picked itself up off its off its bum after being knocked over, you know, we really got, you know, we started investing in cameras and bigger format cameras. So it was really interesting to see that whole. And, you know, I think worked well for me is that, you know, digital camera is not an excuse to take a bad photo and then fix it or have the camera fix it. Oh, I just see digital as a very flexible type of film. So everything that I learned, all the lighting, all the camera, all the lens work stuff, just transferred. And you know, there's no messy chemicals anymore, which is a good thing because I prefer to be a lot more green with things. So that sort of works for me. But this fellow George Rowe had sort of said, "Look, this has happened to the studio. big insurance payout, going to open a brand new studio, and it's going to be completely digital. There's going to be no film at all. So, ballsy move.
Yeah.
And he said, I know you've got that background. And he's, you know, he was coming from straight film. He hadn't delved with digital at all.
Yeah.
So sort of brought me in there as the sort of...
Digital guy.
The digital guy. But then, you know, it didn't take 6 months till I was doing maybe about a quarter of the work. Then the year I was doing about half. And then, you know that sort of natural progression.
100%.
So it was nice. It gave me the opportunity to work, you know. George had a good name. He was a great photographer, a very affable fella, you know, lots of great connections. We did tons of work for City Council, Tourism, TransLink. We used to do all their stuff as well. So good big names, and again, access to places, people, that same, you know, comes around again and again. It's sort of just got to the point then that people were coming in and saying, we'd like Nick to do the job. And you could tell that was a bit of a turning point. And then he turned around and he says, oh, I've lost interest in the photography altogether. Would you like to buy the company out? And I sort of, a bit of investigation, and just decided I think I would just, rather than take someone's name on and then not be there, just time to take the step myself. Oh, so it was, so, you know, in that respect, I didn't have a huge leap, because now I had the respect to sort of say, right, these are your clients, so I will not touch unless they're coming to me directly. So so I did probably lose out on a few really nice clients by not doing that. But eventually, you know, you get back around to there. So
so when was that that you went
2005.
Out? Class.
Mm-hmm. So scary beans.
Across your portfolio then, like, what are some of the things you're most proud of? 2005, that's a big back catalogue. It's amazing.
So I've got about 38 terabytes of disk space of stuff.
I don't even know what a terabyte is.
Yeah, it's up there. Yeah, it's a lot of drives. I have a lot of drives of stuff. I don't know. You know, I've photographed very famous people. I've probably had more fun photographing people that nobody knows.
Sure.
I don't know. There's been a lot of great moments. A lot of great moments. I've been very, very, very fortunate.
Give us a wee name drop, would you?
I photographed Rory McIlroy when he went pro.
Yeah.
And he had the mad curly hair.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the funky trousers.
I love how you looked out the window as if like he was there. Like, oh, I better not let him hear me say that.
He wouldn't have said booty.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, 100%. So, you know, and to see how he's come on now, it's great. Just a lot of things. It's very hard to put a nail on it, you know. One thing that is definitely from being here, being up in that space, we're up at the back of the east wing there.
In the baths, yeah.
In the baths, has been Mike and the team of Artius.
Mm-hmm.
Very sort of unsung heroes. They deal with post-conflict work, as you may or may not know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was obviously they're up near me. We got chatting through of a lot of stuff that they were doing. And again, it's that sort of, you know, anything interests me, excites me, and I'm I want to know more about it. Because I could actually, at one stage, I could perform a tracheotomy. I worked for a medical team. I could perform a tracheotomy, and now after working with Mike, I could probably disarm an IED on the way to give someone a tracheotomy.
No way.
Those guys are insane, the stuff. So they had a big project for one of the Amnesty Geneva organizations, big group, and you know, they're putting together programs for people that are returning to post-conflict zones to sort of point out dangers that have been left by insurgents, and stuff that's just generally feel, if you don't know what it is, like wires hanging out of things or things that are just mm-hmm. not right mm-hmm. or things that have been left behind that are explosive. So we did a series of weeks with them, you know, photographing how they look and how you treat them and whatnot. And they put everything together and sent it off to Geneva to their commissioner. And, you know, it actually, it still sort of wells me up a little bit that he turned around. He says, "Oh, that went out 2 weeks ago. You saved 10 lives." And I was like, I'd never imagined, I'd never thought of an image being able to do that. Well, no, it wasn't just the image, obviously, it's part of their whole mm-hmm. package. But, you know, I've always sort of, I've sort of worked in this commercial world where it's a sale, you know, so it's, mm-hmm. it's a beautiful car. You want this car. Mm-hmm. We've shot it amazingly. Yes, ordered 5 of them. But I've never thought of it in that aspect of, like, you know, saving someone's life.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a more recent big number that sort of sat with me. I think if Mike listens to this, he's saying, "You're just a big woos." Because they're in that day in, day out, you know, which is amazing as well. So mm-hmm. it is meeting these amazing people, working with these amazing people and getting a little glimpse of their day-to-day, you know. It's amazing.
Awesome, man.
So I get that on a weekly basis. This stuff. Not saving 10 people's lives or anything, or performing tracheotomies. But, yeah, just to sort of have that wee glimpse into someone's life or business. And then I do like to go in. I like to, you know, if I'm working with a client, I like to sort of get around what their business is. And then so I'm in that mindset and I'm like, okay, we could do this and we could do this. And have you ever thought of this? And they're just like, you know, interesting. Mm-hmm. That sort of bringing ideas to the pot rather than just coming in and saying, like, there's a glass, just photograph it, glass.
Yeah.
And then you're like, but you don't want to put a nice colored liquid into the glass. You know, so it's nice to add that bit of creativity to it.
But dealing with like the range, there's a great book at the minute called Range. Said like at the minute, like it's a one-time thing. The book will probably be there forever. And it talks about like the importance of having a little tiny bit of knowledge in a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
I think like whenever you work in the type of space you do, like you've been exposed to stuff that you would never imagine. Like, I think I even remember like walking upstairs in the bus and like you were showing me something, like pretty sure you were like, you were photographing like some sort of like factory. And in that moment, you became the expert, you know, in this very, very niche specific factory, like stuff that you would never think about in your day to day life. So I think it's one of the joys of your job as well, is like being able to just learn how the world works in all these random little strange ways.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
What brought you to Ormo Baths and why are you here? Why have you stayed here? Because you've been... Yeah. You think you're Mark Tall, you compete for who was here first.
Mark's been longer. Although I would definitely admit to being a lot older. No, Mark's been in longer. Well, I will be in the bath 3 years this August, which is super. There's a few things. I loved the space when it was a gallery. Mm-hmm. It was one of my favourite art galleries in Belfast, certainly. Great exhibitions, just great space. Love being, you know, love the space in here, the light. And I had, you know, so been in here 3 years. So 4 years before that, I think I was looking for this setup, which wasn't really there.
Yeah, didn't exist.
Didn't exist. So I tried to do it down in Bangor.
Mm-hmm.
An opportunity came up. A landlord that had an old unit office space in the centre of Bangor had asked, could I use it for a studio a couple of times? And then he said, look, we haven't been able to rent this space. Would you want to take it on? And mm-hmm. I said, you know, well, it needs a lot of work.
Yeah.
But it had some really great potential. Like it had the hung ceilings, which I immediately put a thing through and went, gosh, there's like another 2 metres of headroom in here. So stripped all that out. So I'd sort of your dream studio set up down there, which was great. And so I mucked that out for about 4 years. So we had a great studio gallery space with a lot of local artists that put work up on the walls. And then I used it for studio space and we used it for meetings. And band jams and whatnot, and at a little mezzanine area where I was set up with the computers. And my idea was to bring in other creatives, like web guys or designers. So I had a couple of people in temporarily. Again, not the businessman
that
I was. I'm kind of like, you know, would you want to work in this cool space and not have to work and bring clients in, you know, to your kitchen table with the cat running around and the baby crying?
Or a cafe Nero.
Yeah. So it didn't really take down there. But then, shortly after, they brought in the Project 24 with the pods.
Yep.
So they had all the artist pods down there. So it was kind of the idea, but not. I needed a bit of the space access as well. So that sort of came to a head. It was, I kind of found a disconnected from most of the clients in Belfast. And even though Bangor's like 15 minutes away, mm-hmm. when you said, you come down to got a great studio, it took me a year and a half to get one of the main design guys I work with to come down. He said, oh, this is a great studio.
Yeah.
We should do every shot down in here. I'm like, Eureka. And it just didn't come.
Yeah.
So, so I decided to wrap that up. And then I started to look for a more shared space. I had three kids at home at that stage, so working at home was a tough one. Between both of us working and them at schools and in and out at various stages, it's all ahead of you.
I know, you keep saying
that. I'm not going to let all the cats out of the bag or let a couple out. I really wanted a space that I could come in and just sort of focus on, 90% of my work is locational anyway. Like, mm-hmm. I have a very, very tight studio upbringing through Chris's and the other studio I worked in. So, all the lighting and everything is all there, but
yep.
I have sort of a portable kit. Mm-hmm. So I started to look at a few places, looked at Blick Studios.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of bohemian and very arty, which it could have slotted in there, no problem.
Bring
I just
skateboard.
Kind of thought, do I want to sit in a space and talk endlessly with like-minded individuals all day long and not get any work done? And then, obviously, the bars then was the other option. I came in and looked around, and again, just sort of brought me back to that. I love the space. I loved what they do in here. It had a much more professional feel to it, but not, hard mm-hmm. professional. And the guys, the guys kind of make it as well. They're so welcoming. They're so supportive. Through COVID as well, sort of allowing, put fees on hold at their, detriment really as well. And they'd do anything for you. And then mm-hmm. I think the cherry on the top of the cake was the event space upstairs when I said, can I use that as a studio space temporarily? And they're like, yeah, why not? So to have a center of town location mm-hmm. and studio facilities.
Crazy.
Now, that Chris Hill's studio was literally two streets across from
was
here.
Was it really?
Yeah. And all the agencies were around it. So they just basically got out their door, walked down the street, into the shoot, did the shoot, out the door with the goods. That was as simple as it could be. So that was the sort of clinker with Bangor, was like they weren't coming down,
mm-hmm.
so it wasn't
mm-hmm.
getting the work. But you know what? 2 days after I was in here, walking out for a sandwich, bumped into one of the big agency guys that I hadn't worked with for 4 years since I'd been down in Bangor.
Yeah.
Oh, are you based in here now? I hear it's lovely in there. I said, come on in, have a chat with me. I'll give you a tour.
Yeah.
So they were coming to me.
Unbelievable.
So it was just, it's kind of, again, it's one of those sort of meant to be.
Yeah.
Things happen for a reason and you land on your feet, And I've loved it. I've loved having the space in here and to be able to come in. I'm working it up there, and then obviously sitting with Mark as well. I think we've sort of temporarily classed that as the creative corner.
It is.
You've got it going it on really down is. In here as well. But it's just nice. The people are nice. Everyone's very open. Now I am old school in here, so you're seeing a lot of brand new, fresh face, lots of energy, and you can feed off that as well.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot going on, a lot of super ideas, again, super people.
Mm-hmm.
It's great for wee location shoots in here, for doing quick headshots, wee bits of video. I've been fortunate to do work for the Ormo guys as well, and for Barclays, which is great. Puts a feather in my cap too, to say 100%. You work with them, you 100%. Know. And it's good, you know, there's people, and the guys at the front will say, someone comes and they go, God, we need a video quickly. And they just go up and, you know, it's great that they can just come up and say, Nick, could you chat to us a wee minute? And, you know, it's lovely to be able to do the in-house stuff as well. Mm-hmm. It's just nice to give back a wee bit with it.
Totally.
Yeah.
So. I think something that needs to happen is I would love to see your Australian exhibition in the event space.
Okay.
And I think we would know one or two people who could make that happen.
Could you put in a good word? I've run out of them.
Yeah, I'd love to see that, man. It sounds like some really, really interesting.
I'm thinking big. I'm thinking big images.
Big, big.
Like, we might even have just six.
Just do it.
Just six.
Mate, six out of, like, how many do you reckon you would have taken, like?
Thousands.
Oh, mate. So that's going to be, that's the cream of the cream, like.
Tight. It might be tight.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to that. I'm going to put a wee bit of social pressure there.
You do that. I get the 5 minutes to start going through stuff.
That's it. That's it, mate. That's
it. Yeah.
Well, I guess like landing the plane a bit then. Always like there's a series of stock questions I always ask people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do you think has been the biggest challenge for you so far? Take that any way you want.
I don't know. I think because I probably have learned to be a little bit more pushy than I normally. I know we said earlier there I don't really like to push people on, but I'm just a bit more. I think I'm a bit more chasing stuff.
Yeah,
You have to.
You do.
I think you have to adapt. I'm really excited by new technology, although I'm an old dud. I've tried to, the past year I've sort of embraced 360 photography and video and how to use that. It's been very successful with some projects with Mark actually as well, with his lovely work and projects. I'm quite, photography has always been the sort of forefront for me, but I absolutely love time-lapse work.
Mm.
And first big time-lapse commission was for, and here's a query for you. The Rise Project. Do you know what that is?
It's the Balls on the Falls.
He's on it.
Yo!
He's on it. You're like one of like
I know
50 people that have actually known what it is.
I know.
So yes, Balls on the Falls. you don't even like because I've met the artist.
I know it's means disrespectful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine someone like giving you like one of your like your crown jewel like photos that you've taken, and they just give it like a wee slang. You're like,
whoa. Yeah.
But so, maybe it's a sign of endearment.
Yeah. But Balls of Falls. Was the first big time lapse, and that was a huge learning curve. And it was, I actually did night classes in editing because I was like, right, I'm shooting all this stuff. I know how to stitch it together into little mini bits of video, but then I have to edit all that video into a piece that actually tells a story.
That's right.
Which I like, I really love about video is telling the story. And time lapse is great because we squeezed in 6 months of build into a 4 minute video.
Amazing. Which
and these days is too long. I'll probably have to relook at that. But and that dragged me into the right video editing, which I needed to be dragged into anyway.
Yeah.
And then the evolution of that has really been through clients that I've worked for that have come in and done the photography for, like maybe a big manufacturer. So we're photographing all their CEOs, all their managers, floor staff, all their facilities. We're doing, we're doing little time-lapse bits of them building things. And then, they're cleaning the place up. Everyone gets their hair done. They get new uniforms. And they said, oh, we have to do this all again next week for video crew. And then 3 weeks after that, they come back and said, the video was awful. Could you just come back in and just shoot the video as well?
Class.
So that kind of seemed naturally to say to people, right, we'll come in and we'll do the video and the photos at the same time.
Yeah.
Brush your hair once, clean your teeth once, brush the floor once.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
And it's all consistent. So that has really worked in my favor. That has been a real turn point to be able to offer that. Now it's another, photography would be a day shoot and maybe half a day edit.
Mm-hmm.
Video is a day shoot and maybe 4 days of edit.
At least.
So it's kind of, and that was quite hard to take a whole, especially when I was sort of a bit, you know, very new to it. So, you know, there's technology sort of come on, and a lot of online cloud stuff will, software will deal with a lot of that stuff now, which has allowed me to free up to do more. So I call all my little time-lapse cameras are all named, because they're all little employees. They, they don't chat back to you. They just get on with their job, occasionally run out of battery, and occasionally get hit by birds. But of the avian type. Unless they're in a bar and someone doesn't want to see. But yeah, so that's exciting.
That's cool. I mean, like, if I'm right, like, you shot the first 8K portrait time-lapse?
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty big.
On the planet.
That's a pretty big claim to fame.
Yeah, well, it was, you know what? The technology was coming.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite there. And it was for a client in Belfast. Bedford House have this big two-story screen.
Yeah.
They got this thing installed. It looked great. And then they're like, we can't get any footage high enough quality to show off what this thing could do. I'm like, what? I said, what about the people that supplied it? So they give us three images that are high enough quality. I said, well, I can shoot high enough quality. So I've put some of my work on it, which is great as a sort of temporary exhibition. You know, and they've been loving it because they've got stuff other than the three photos they got supplied.
Yeah.
So we came to heads and we said, you know, we said about doing this time lapse of a day to night to get the idea of the building working through the morning and then lights coming on, working in the night, traffic coming around. It's like, great, yeah, we can do that. But how do we do it high enough quality? So a brand new camera came out from Nikon and they claimed you could do an 8K time lapse. And I went and I said, but can you do one that, because the building's obviously that way and not that way.
Yeah.
So I need a portrait and it needs to go on that screen is tall. Like it's an oddity of a screen. So that's why it's so hard to get footage for.
Yeah.
So I talked to Nikon UK and they said, oh, this camera's not even released yet. So we've got one. We've got one in-house to play around with. And I'm like, can I borrow it? So they went, Yeah, you could borrow it.
Crazy.
So we shot it on that, and it was a lot of, oh my God, at rendering time. Days.
Wow.
Yeah, so we shot that, and we put it up, and it looked amazing. You can walk up to the screen. You can see this little guy in his office answering his phone, reading his
really?
Paper.
Really?
Yeah, it's nuts.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know whether he spotted himself or not, but the quality out of it was phenomenal. But it was just, it was amazing to be able to do it. Now, the shot with the camera, the done time-lapse stuff of Mount Fuji in Japan. But when I spoke to Nikon, I said, well, has anyone shot this that way?
Yeah.
You know, portrait instead of landscape?
Yeah.
They said, no.
Crazy.
And we don't know if there's any software that could deal with that. So there was a guy in Germany who has a time-lapse software, and I said, can you produce a time-lapse vertically instead of landscape? And he went, yeah. I said, can you do it with an 8K footage? And he went, not done that one yet. But so I kind of worked with him and we got it done.
Class, mate.
So it's good to be, you know, people are accessible. People are accessible and you ask nicely enough and
you do.
It might do. So yeah, so we did that and that was sort of given back to Nikon as a bit of a, here's what your camera can do. So it was a nice one to, it's nice to have the knowledge of photography and video and time-lapse work and then apply it to a new technology. I find that quite exciting that something will be brought out and you're like, well, if you stick that on there and use it for this instead of that, then they go, ooh, I don't know. that's quite exciting.
That's so, how stuff gets moved forward as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's nice to be able to, I do like the people to come to me and say, here, do you know anyone who could do a 360 video around Ormo Baths? Yep, we can. Yeah. So you don't want a 360 video. You want a 360 hyperlapse. So you whiz around there. So that's the one we did for Barclays a wee while ago. It's just a nicer way. Videos are so short. Attention span's so short. So it has to, time-lapse can really pack in a lot of impact quickly.
And like you said, like there's be advancements in technology, like, it's something very new as well for the attention span. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember whenever GoPro, like, this is such old news now, but, like, you know, GoPro brought out their 360, and then mm-hmm. you could do that, like, I don't know what they called it. I think it was called, like,
Globe. Small Planet.
Small Planet.
Yeah.
You know, I remember first time seeing that and just being amazed.
Yeah.
Absolutely
amazed. You see some of the stuff people are doing with that.
Oh, my goodness.
They can animate it and walk around.
Yeah.
Said Small Planet, or squish it and bounce it, and, yeah, been amazing.
It's class. Yeah. If you could take anyone from Northern Ireland, dead or alive, out for a cup of coffee or a pint, who would you take? Mm. Where would you take them?
Well, where would we go? It would have to be a pint. I don't do coffee. I don't know. I might have to. I'm sort of lapsing into a classic rock era. I don't know. It might be my age.
Go ahead.
Might be Phil Lynott.
Yeah.
And bring him back. Is he classed as dub, or he was up here, isn't he? Was he not? No.
Who is he?
He was the lead singer of Thin Lizzy.
Unbelievable.
I think he'd have some stories to tell.
Oh, mate, buckets.
On a local platform, I think. Where would we go for a pint, though? Oh, another old man quandary. It's like, where do I actually go for a pint these days? Probably the Crown. Have to be the Crown.
Nice.
Cliched, but
mate, it's good. Pint it always delivers.
Pint of Guinness in the Crown.
Love that.
That's where it always starts.
yeah.
Usually where it ends.
It's the foundation, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you could go back to an 18-year-old version of yourself, what advice would you give him?
Mm. I've always been a wee bit of a... You got to try it or you might regret it.
Yeah.
So... I was the first one of our mates to get a tattoo. That went down a storm when I told the parents 5 days before I was getting it. The abuse I
at
got
least
for
you,
it.
At least you even give them that notice, you know.
I some did.
People are and like, the day I went, oh, well, look at this.
The day I went in to get it, he was sick and his mum was in. And, you know, he had one of these sort of tattoo pseudonyms. So this wee woman came on the intercom and said, David's not in today. He's not feeling well. I think it was his mum. I was like, David, who's David?
Yeah.
Oh, it's your man.
Yeah.
So I actually went back home and said, I went in and my mum said, did you do it? I said, yeah.
Nice.
And then I obviously let out later. I said, no, the guy wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I think they thought it was just a bit of teenage rebellion.
Yeah.
Stuff. So I waited till they went away on holiday and booked in and got it done. And yeah, it was one of those ones I'm either going to regret not ever doing it or just live with it. So worked out well.
Awesome.
Worked out well. Had to get more. Much later though, I didn't didn't go bananas with it. But yeah. So I think a lot of times it's kind of those, I don't know unless I try it.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Awesome. Nick, thank you so much for this.
Thank
really
you.
Have enjoyed
it. Loved it.
And really appreciate you coming in.
Hope you get some sense out of it.
I appreciate you taking the long commute from upstairs to downstairs.
Anytime.